Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 31, Dan Miller. Dan is a well-known, best-selling author, three New York Times best-selling books, 48 Days to the Work You Love, Wisdom Meets Passion, No More Mondays. A renowned speaker, speaks at, I think, 7 or 10 events a year, travels extensively through the U.S., but what's cool about him is he's still learning. At this point in his career, nothing to prove, nothing really needing to do, and yet he'll attend a tremendous amount of events to keep learning. He'll read 30 or 40 books this year. It's an amazing story of a man who really just shows that you really have to put the work in. And there's a quote in there that he uses about putting the work in even when you're not the best. If you put the work in, you're going to do really well. And so in this segment, we spend a lot of time talking about his business, his philosophies, and how he's gotten to the place that he's been. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and tonight's guest is going to get embarrassed when I say this, but you know, I've been following him for about 12 years, I guess, kind of a little bit of a man crush on him, just a real mentor, didn't know he was helping me, and I think that's kind of his legacy. It's going to be, he's going to be one of those guys that has helped tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people and never meet them face to face. Well, I'm fortunate enough to be able to meet Dan face to face and now talk with him tonight. Welcome, Dan Miller.
Well, thanks. Golly, you scared me with your introduction there. I've had just some amazing opportunities over the years to connect with people, and it's been an exciting journey for me.
Well, you've had three New York Times best-selling books. You spoke in front of, at this point, hundreds of thousands of people. Is that fair?
That would be fair, sure.
You've been all around, I know, the United States. I'm assuming some around the world?
Not much in terms of business. I like the good old U.S. of A., so most of my business work has been here. Now, we've traveled just personally.
Okay, so but you've talked to so many people. You've had such an influence on. How does that settle with you as you a little more seasoned in your life? How does that settle with you? Because you're really so down to earth and so personable when people meet you face to face.
Well, I do recognize the privilege I've been given, but I'm also realistic about the fact that, you know, have I been lucky? I suppose so. But when we go back to that good definition, you know, what is luck? Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. You know, I've been pretty much in the trenches to learn how to do things well in this business space. And so because of that, sure, opportunities have showed up that I couldn't have anticipated, and they continue to do so every day. So it's humbling, but again, I think it's a reward for doing the work along the way of serving people well, but also learning how to run business well, how to set up realistic financial models, and how to make this whole thing work and have a whole lot of fun doing it.
You travel to different conferences to speak, of course, but do you actually still travel to conferences to learn?
Totally. Totally. Surely half the conferences I go to, I'm a participant like everybody else. I pay my full registration fee, and I sit there, and I'm there just to learn. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm right now identifying, you know, we're in the last quarter of the year, I'm identifying what am I going to attend next year? Not where can I squeeze in to be on stage. I mean, I've got those pretty well maxed out for next year. But I'm looking for what is it that I can attend? Maybe even in the new industry or new twist that I've not been exposed to before, where I can go and just sit there and absorb that. Absolutely. Love those experiences.
You know, it's interesting. A little bit offline, we talked about, you know, the conference that we met, which was Jim Cockrum's CES conference down in Louisville. And that is a new crowd for you. I'm sure, you know, there are people there that knew you, of course, but there were many that didn't. To walk us through what you'll do with that. You know, I mean, you're an e-commerce seller, and I think that, you know, when people hear my podcast, most of them are Amazon, eBay, or Etsy sellers. But you're truly an e-commerce seller. You're a 7-figure seller, but you're using your own website, book companies are selling your books on Amazon and all the rest of those places. But what will you do with this new group of people? How will you approach that from a business point of view?
Well, for one thing, being with a group that's kind of in a parallel track in many ways to what I'm doing. I'm a big one for leveraging your intellectual expertise, creating systems that work 168 hours a week rather than just trading your time for dollars. And this group where we met, you know, Jim's CES group, really understands that. They get that. I was so excited about meeting people who were, you know, 18 and 88 as well, recognizing the level playing field that's created just by understanding systems and executing that well. Now, I've had a whole lot of follow-up from people who were there, so it was a new audience for me. And sure, those people will be introduced to some of the things that we do, and hopefully I can encourage them in some ways maybe that they've not experimented in their own business. There's a tendency to get kind of a tunnel vision in that what we're doing, if it works well, we kind of just stick to that, and sometimes that can isolate us to new opportunities. But I saw it as a stretching opportunity for me. I mean, I accepted immediately when Jim asked me about it, because I want to be in front of people like that who are doing things with excellence, even if it's in one particular method of e-commerce.
I love it. And so for you, you know, one of the things we did, we went out to lunch and we had a talk about my little podcast, and we talked about some different things. And we got talking about your books and your podcast and your newsletters, right? So, I mean, you have a massive newsletter that goes, you have 130,000 subscribers. I mean, it's massive. And you still do it where most people wouldn't do it. You write books, and as you always say, you don't make a lot of money on books, but they are done for a reason. And you have this podcast. You've been doing this for years. Walk us through how you use those things to support your e-commerce business.
I started an electronic newsletter in August of 2000. Now, prior to that, we were doing a physical newsletter that we would send out. But when you look at how that's done, you got about a six-week lead time on content. So the content is old before you ever put it in the mail. So I switched, much to the dismay of some of those people who are getting a physical newsletter. I said, well, this is just the way we're going to do it. So I started in August of 2000 with 67 email addresses. That's the number that I had in my database of email addresses. Sent it out and said, yeah, if you enjoy it, you know, share it with people. If you don't, let us know. We'll take you off the list. And it just has grown organically, just sending people tips about how to get ahead, how to find your passion, how to put legs on that, how to find or create work that's meaningful. So I've just continued to do that. Now, we used to grow that. That used to grow at about 1,000 new subscribers a week. I did that for a long time. And then, about 6 years ago, it kind of plateaued out. Well, by then, I was doing blogging. I was doing a podcast. So I thought, well, we're switching to new forms of medium here, so I can just discontinue the newsletter. We don't need to do that anymore. But like I always do at any point, I ask my listeners and readers, I asked them, well, the people who are getting the newsletter just threw up their hands in dismay. Don't you dare take this away from us. And what I realized is that those were different audiences. In as much as it's easy to think, well, if somebody got my newsletter, now I'm doing a blog, so they're reading that. And if they read the blog, they hear me talk about podcasts or they listen to the podcast. No, people segment how they like to get information. So the people who are getting the newsletter, some of those could care less about my podcast. So in recognizing that it was different audiences, it really helped me a couple things. One is we continue doing that as we have continued today to do the newsletter every week. Starting that in August of 2000, I've never missed a week, nothing. I've never missed a week, no matter what holidays, no matter what's happening nationally, I've never missed a week. And I think that has something to do with why I've got the numbers that I do, just the consistency, not wearing people out, not five times a week, once a week, just the tips and updates. But the other thing is, in recognizing that those are just different audiences, it allows me to repurpose content, because in my podcast, I talk about a lot of things that are then summarized in the newsletter. The newsletter that goes out, in essence, is a summary of the blogs that I've done for that week and people's responses to them. So there's a lot of repurposing content, so it really gave me new eyes to recognize, no, people aren't absorbing everything that I put out, and what I need to do to be successful is give them the option to choose how they choose to receive it. So when people come to me and say, Dan, you know, I got this idea, should I do an ebook? Should I do a regular book? Should I do a podcast? Should I do, you know, some kind of instructional manual? I'm like, yes, 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 and yes. Repurpose the content, let them choose, and you start to leverage your audience penetration.
And ultimately, I mean, let's face it, you're a business, right? You're in business, and you're using these tools to, A, let them know more about you, kind of that jab, 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 you know, Gary Vaynerchuk would talk about, right? Give, 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 give. But you're not afraid to ask, right? You're not afraid to pull together a product. I love the story where you know, your mastermind product, or you've got a couple of those stories, maybe you can tell us one, where you just came across an idea. People were responding to it. You created a product, and boom, your audience immediately bought the product, and it's been a wild success for you.
Yeah, I've had some really astounding successes like that. And having an audience that's built in, they're extremely responsive. And really, I've never experienced the kind of loyalty and responsiveness that I have from a podcast. It goes way beyond the level of commitment that I get from anything in a printed form. And boy, has that been exciting to explore. Now, I love podcasting. As I told you before we started recording, I think, you know, I was on terrestrial radio, regular radio, for 6 years before I started doing a podcast, and wondered if I would still have the same kind of engagement where it wasn't actually live. It has done nothing but exponentially increase, even being a podcast, because we're able to reach so many more people. We're not constricted by geography like we are with regular radio. I love the new options. And here's the deal. You know, people ask me, you know, well, is podcasting, you know, the best way to get? Well, right now it's a pretty hot ticket. But are we going to have some new options 3 years from now? I would fully venture to say that we will. And when those come along, and when that supersedes the power of a podcast, man, count me in. I'm going to be on that new train.
Well, you know, all right, so let's I'm going to date you, and I am going to say your age. You're older than I am, closer to upper 60s. How about I say that way? You know, it blows me away that I'm talking to a man who, you know, didn't grow up in the computer age, you know, and if anybody knows your story, you know, you grew up an Amish kid in a farm, right? And so how do you – I mean, you must put an incredible amount of effort and to stay current, right? And obviously there's some intellect and there's skills and all those things. But, you know, the number of books you read, the number – you put a lot of effort into this every single thing you do.
If that's a question, yeah, absolutely.
It really is a question, because it's just – it blows me away when I look and you see the number of books you read last year, and it just – I'm like, okay, he's crushing me there. And yet your age, and yet you'll still, again – just use those tools and use those tools consistently. You've had that podcast for 6 years. 6 years.
Never
radio 6 years prior. So you never missed a week.
No.
And yet you travel enormously. You speak all around the country. And I'm just blown away. Would you say that consistency is also one of the reasons that you've had so much success and outlasted so many others that have started?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Stephen. I mean, I hear people, you know, they either start a podcast and, you know, 6 weeks later, nobody's listening, I'm going to stop. Or they start writing a blog and 90 days later, I'm not getting comments on my blog. And I'm like, are you serious? If you're going to do something in this space, decide how you're going to do it with excellence. Do it for a year and never second guess yourself. Never look back over your shoulder for a year. Then look at what the results are. But you can't just stick your toe in the water. It's just not how it works. You may have people listening. You don't know it. You know, you don't hear from them. They're picking it up somewhere other than iTunes, so you don't track them in your download numbers, whatever. I don't pay attention to those kind of numbers, incidentally. I just do what I do. And at the end of the day, it seems to work pretty well. But I think the consistency is one of those things that builds trust and rapport with your audience. If you're here today, gone tomorrow, it really destroys trust.
Well, your advice to me has been sound advice, and I'm still new at it, of course, and I do track my numbers, and I'm very it is a little humbling when you realize how many people are listening to you, and I'm very lucky about that, and the comments have just been wonderful. But I think the best advice you gave me, well, there were two really good pieces of advice. The one was, Steve, don't sell yourself out and take commercials. Don't do it, because Otherwise, you're going to be like terrestrial radio, and that's not what people want. There's a reason people are blocking ads, right? They just don't want to hear it. So I've stayed true to that, and I don't. I'm not going to, and I think that was really sound advice. And the other thing is that eventually you have to have a business model here, and, you know, we spoke some time about that, and so I'm working on that. So I do appreciate that advice. You know, looking at your business, Dan, what portion – now, you coach, you have events – you sell lots of books and you sell a lot of products. Mm-hmm. Can you break down? So, you know, I love your Venn diagram, and let's talk about your Venn diagram and how everything is connected in some way.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I use a Venn diagram, which really, to give kind of a visual on that, is three circles that overlap. So at one point they all overlap, they all converge. In that spot for me is my writing. But interestingly enough, in my financial model, I attach $0 to my writing. Now, you mentioned, you know, I've done pretty well with some books out there. But what comes in from the books is peanuts compared to how I've leveraged that message in other ways that does create significant income. So I don't want to just be, and this is where, you know, I have a lot of authors who, you know, tap me on the shoulder. How can I do what you've done with 48 Days to the Working Love or other books that I have? Because as authors, typically, they work on that manuscript. They crank that out. Boy, they submit it to the publisher. Boom. Now they're finished. Now they want to go sit in a lawn chair by the mailbox and wait on those royalty checks. Well, that's not the way that it works in today's environment. If they do that, they're going to be sorely disappointed. To me, my books are nothing but a business card. It simply introduces people to the ways that they can connect with our 48 Days community and with other things that I have that might be of value to them. So I do speaking, as you mentioned. I do coaching. We have a coaching mastery program. We have live events here about seven times a year on my property in Franklin, Tennessee. We have a pretty robust product suite, products where we've repurposed content again and again and again, any way that somebody wants to take advantage of that. We have affiliate relationships with a lot of people out there. I have a mastermind. Those are all offshoots of the same content that's in the books, but the books are just the tip of the iceberg in introducing people to ways that they can get engaged in this whole process.
Love it. And one of your number one products you sell is a disc profile. And I remember dealing with Ashley years and years ago when I went through it, your daughter Ashley, and I remember you describing that as a vending machine, right? So, you know, and a lot of my listeners will relate to this. You know, we buy, and those who do private label create a product, has it sent right from the factory directly to Amazon, and it just goes out. They never even touch the product, and it's a vending machine. You know, you've done that electronically with your disc profile, but you've taken it even a step further because you're selling it in volume to different businesses. Where'd that concept come from?
Well, in just keeping my eyes open, as you mentioned, I do read a lot. If there's a business book that I hear about, well, I mean, 30 seconds later, it's on its way to me from Amazon. I mean, I love the convenience of it. I was on a call today earlier, and somebody mentioned a book, and I mean, literally 30 seconds later, without interrupting the flow of our conversation, that book's on its way to me. I'll have it tomorrow. So I try to stay attuned to what the opportunities are out there. And in doing so, you know, I see these new ways. Now, I love vending. I mean, we know that in as much as we have a lot of sophisticated businesses out there today, there are still three ways that are in the top 10 that create millionaires in America. And those include vending, printing, and dry cleaning. Very traditional businesses. And I've had some experience in the vending business, some that didn't work so well and some that worked pretty well. Well, vending, usually we think about that cashew peanut machine when you're walking out the door at Walmart. You put in 50 cents and you get a little handful of cashews, walk out the door. So it's still a very, very traditional bricks and mortar, physical kind of vending, a kind of business. All I've done is looked at how could I take that into the virtual world. So we have these personality reports that are electronically generated. In essence, we have clients like State Farm Insurance, Nissan Manufacturing, and lots of others like that, where they are clients of ours. But rather than then having to restock them where we back a truck up to a dock and roll in on a dolly some product, we can restock their inventory virtually instantly. They can restock it at 2 a.m. while I'm sleeping. So it's the same dynamics as a vending machine, but it's done all electronically. And also that removes any kind of geographic barriers. So we have clients in Seattle and Houston, Miami and New York. It doesn't matter where they are. But in essence, it really is just a vending machine. And so we turn out a lot of those personality profiles. Here's another example, Stephen, of how that works. So in my book, 48 Days to the Work You Love, people are reading along. Let's say that somebody bought that on Amazon. You know, that's a commerce system you guys are very familiar with. So I get my $1.50, approximately is what I'm going to get as a royalty to me as an author. Well, whoop-de-doo, you know, I'm happy to have that. So they're reading through the book. On page 117, I'm talking about personality style and how you really need to understand yourself to identify what kind of business would be a good fit for you. So I go through the DISC of the DISC personality styles. And so you ought to be able to recognize yourself from these characteristics. Incidentally, if you'd like a more fully complete, a more robust report, just use this link. We'll give you a discount. But you can get a 35-page report that talks about you specifically and how you relate to others and what kind of environment is going to work best for you. That report is $28.50. Do you think maybe I make a little more than $1.50 on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's where I make my money. Again, just one example of how the book is a feeder for other parts of my business where I do make money. So we sell thousands of those reports, and the money I make on those reports far surpasses the money that I get in royalty on those books that are trickling out. But I just look for opportunities like that. I don't know. I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night with ideas. But I do. I read magazines like Fast Company and Inc. and Entrepreneur and even things like Wired and Mental Floss and other books that are just interesting. Intelligent Optimist. I mean, I read magazines like that. And that's just invariably, I'm turning down pages, I'm pulling things out that I can integrate into the business that I do, even if the idea came from some area that's seemingly unrelated to the kind of business that I do. So I try not to be too myopic, where I only talk to people who are doing business exactly like I am. I mean, I want to talk to real estate people, and I want to talk to toy manufacturers. Tomorrow I'm going to be visiting with a guy who owns a manufacturing company, and I love learning from ways that people are doing business in ways that I yet have not experienced, and then looking for how can I make my business even better by maybe just pulling in an idea or two here and there. That's why when you ask about me going to conferences, and I'll go to a conference, I don't expect it to transform my life, but I can go to any conference. I mean, I can go to a Mary Kay conference, trust me. Well, that's not a good example because I know I could learn a lot there because they're in direct selling, but I can go to a conference on, you know, how to grow cantaloupe. And I trust me, I'm going to come away with one or two ideas that I can fully implement in what I'm doing. And I have a 10X principle in place for whenever I go to a conference. If I go to a conference and I spend $1,000 registration fee, I am looking for what is the one idea that I can put in place and get a 10 times return. What is the one idea that I can fully be confident I'm going to add $10,000 to my income. And frankly, it's usually more than that, but that's what I'm looking for. I think that's a fair return. So when I invest in books that I read or magazines or conferences that I go to, I'm always looking for what's that 10X return that I'm going to get from this exposure.
And that's just great stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to walk you through what a lot of the sellers that would listen to my podcast would be doing and see if you can come up with some ideas on how we can help them move forward based on your personal experiences. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. In this segment, we spend a lot of time talking about segments of Dan's business and how he uses one to help another one. His example is if he sells a book, the publisher, you know, makes the money. He gets a buck and a half or whatever on a book. But what's in that book, it helps direct the reader to services that Dan offers, either whether it be coaching or whether it be profiles, personality profiles, those kinds of things. Or it leads to an event that he holds at his place. Or it leads to coaching by others even, and that he would receive an affiliate. Everything's connected. But what really blows me away is his work ethic. He's done a podcast, a newsletter, and the podcast was originally on regular radio for 6 years, and then it moved on to regular podcast 52 weeks a year. He has not missed a week in 52 weeks, whether it be the radio/podcast or his newsletter. That's how he has such a large audience. You got to listen to that. He's taken that and been able to convert that into an e-commerce business. His model, which is seven figures, does not rely on Amazon or eBay or Etsy. He, as he said, he's got a little tangent relationship with them, but it's him because he's put in the work. And that's the lesson that we all need, myself included, put in the work. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Dan Miller, New York Times bestseller, coach, traveler, speaker. I mean, he's done everything. And granddad, we had that discussion offline too. And just a great father, great husband. You really involve your family in the business. At one point, have all of them worked in the business?
Oh, yes. They sure have. Even before I was in this kind of business, I mean, I've always been an entrepreneur from the time I could breathe. And so my children have always been involved. It's taught them creative business skills. And so all of them were involved directly in my business. But, you know, for the most part, they've also now are well established in their own ventures, which I fully embrace. The youngest of my three children is my daughter. She's never had another job. She has worked for me for 10 years. But even there, we have a creative relationship. She's not an employee. She has her own consulting company. I just happen to be her only client. So we've structured it so she recognizes she's independent. She gets compensated based on results, not just because she puts in time at daddy's business. Time doesn't mean much around here. Only results do. But yeah, they've all been involved. And my sons, I have two sons and then a daughter, but my sons are intimately connected in the way that we share ideas. I invite them to conferences where I'm going to go to. I just this morning invited my sons to go to a conference in April that I'm going to go to in San Diego. And I said, why don't you guys join me? Let's go together. We'll have a ball.
Oh, that's great. It's just got to be every father's dream, especially to see the success. I'm familiar with Jared and Kevin and what they've been doing. And it's just really, it just says a lot, that environment. You know, it's just great. Okay, so let me describe some of the businesses that the people that would be in our business. And you get a little bit from the CES conference, so you get a little bit of a crux, right? So we have the smallest sellers that would be getting started in this business, might have sold on eBay for a while, now trying to move to Amazon because it's such a much larger platform. And they're trying to get started and they're struggling, you know, to find product. They're having money troubles. They're just not really business organized. Then we have the next level seller who's been doing it for a while and really having some success. But and it's pretty much where I always say that people get to. It's easy to sell $10,000 to $20,000 a month on Amazon. It's still not enough to earn a real living. And so to get past that point of stuck, they start running into trouble because they don't have structure, they don't have processes in place, and they need help. But they don't know where to go, and they're trying to do everything. They're kind of that solopreneur wanting to get to that next level. And then we have mega sellers. I mean, we have many, many sellers that are selling over $1 million, have employees, have virtual assistants, and really are trying to stay current with all the changes because it changes. Amazon changes so frequently and trying to stay current with the rules. So we kind of reach all that gamut. And so – pick one. I don't care which one you want to talk about. Pick some advice that you could bring from your experience? I know, as you said, you've had multiple businesses over the years, and some success and some failed, right? And so you've had some of that stuff. Where would you start if you were coming into this business? How would you get going?
Well, in the Venn diagram that I described to you, one of the pieces in there for me, just as somebody wants to encourage people, wants to help them get started in what they're doing, know how to understand themselves, how to translate that into work that's meaningful, it's real easy for me to have a piece in there called coaching. And frankly, that's the easiest one to get started in. That's the one where I can make money tomorrow just by letting people know I'm available to help, consult with them, sit down, figure things out. That's where you get immediate results. So what I do, and what I would encourage people to do, is to have short-term, intermediate, and long-term plans for how you want to build your business. Be careful about just starting and just sticking with one thing that you do. And, you know, to be honest, I'm a little concerned about people who are just doing a business like on Amazon, because things can change. And I'm concerned about people who have built their entire audience on Facebook, because they can change those algorithms, and all of a sudden, instead of reaching 300,000 people, you're reaching 3,000. I don't want to be paranoid or suspicious, but I think there still has to be a real, tangible component of your business that's face-to-face, nose-to-nose, belly-to-belly. And if you don't have any of that component in your business, then I think you're vulnerable to some of the tools that we're using today. But those tools could change. So in as much as I love the kind of leverage that we can get, that I've been able to get in my business, at the end of the day, Stephen, if everything went away tomorrow, man, I could be out painting houses or mowing yards tomorrow and life would go on. What I do in business is not the core essence of who I am. It's just one tool that I've found that's pretty fun that we're using right now. But there's a whole lot of other things that I could move to very, very quickly. One time I had an auto accessories business. This was years ago. So we were doing, you know, pinstriping and dorage guard, wheel up molding and sunroofs and running boards and brush guards, cruise controls, all those kind of things. And my mother, it was one of those times where there was a real slowdown in the economy and people stopped buying cars. And we were doing primarily new cars. And she was like, geez, Dan, what are you going to do, you know, if people just stop buying cars? I said, you know what, I'm going to be putting pinstripes on buggies, because transportation is going to continue in some form or fashion. Cars just happen to be popular. They can come and go. But people are always going to be figuring things out. And the same thing is true with the kind of business that we're doing. If all this fancy technology that we've been spoiled with in the last 5 years goes away, we'll go back to doing business in ways that still work and still be very profitable. I'm not concerned about that at all, but I would encourage people, do something where you know you're in the driver's seat, and if all the technology goes away, you still have a real business, not something that's just dependent on being out there in the virtual world.
And I think that's a great point, because what you're saying is basically, you know, the ability to buy something and sell something, that model is really not sustainable, because right now the only place you're selling it is Amazon. They go away, they lock you out for whatever reason, things go wrong, you don't have a backup plan. You have no other plan because you haven't fine-tuned it. You have a huge e-commerce business, and none of it is on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. It's on 48days.net. It's yours, right?
Yes. Now, when we have tangents, you know, that kind of take us into some of those arenas, but I'm certainly not dependent on them. Ultimately, yeah, our big elephant in the room is our own e-commerce. And then the things that I do that you've mentioned, you know, the privileged opportunities I get to speak in front of audiences, those bring people right back to our own home site. Now, there are people out there who have leveraged their expertise pretty well, people like Seth Godin, who do not do it like I do, does not have a business infrastructure. So he writes a book and it's only available on those other kind of sources. And I asked him one time, I said, Seth, knowing what you do, why do you do business the way you do and miss all the opportunity of having your own infrastructure? And he says, because I'm lazy. Exactly what he said to me. He says, Dan, you're really doing it right. He said, I'm just not willing to put in the work to make it work like you do. I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, he saw it very clearly, and I couldn't understand. I was scratching my head. Why does he miss all the opportunity? But now he's leveraged some other things, obviously. I mean, my gosh, he's paid an armload to speak, and he has all kinds of cool consulting opportunities. But I'm really – what I'm interested in, and really the only thing that I'm interested in that gets my interest is, what can I do once and get paid 10,000 times? I'm not very excited about things that I just do once and get paid once. I mean, when I work with professionals, earlier today I had a coaching call with a physician, and she's paid extremely well. You know, she makes $250,000 a year, but it's one and done. You know, she works 60 hours a week, doesn't know how to get off that wheel because all she has is linear income. She does it once, gets paid once, starts over the next morning. What I want is residual income. I want those little systems in place that are working 168 hours a week. If I decide to work 10 hours, the systems are still working for me. And I know you know people on Amazon understand that principle. It's just that, yeah, I've looked for a variety of ways to have those systems in place so that I'm not dependent on any one organization to make it work.
Well, we're really spending a lot of time reducing touch points and trying to get those pieces out so eventually it can come directly from the factory to consumer through whatever channel, whether it be Amazon or eBay, where you never touch the product, similar to that vending machine. And that's really where all of us would love to get there. But it's a challenge. I mean, because there are, you know, right now they have the big audience, and it's very difficult to get your own audience. You can start a website tomorrow. Where's the traffic come from? And I guess that's one of the reasons I was so excited to talk to you, was because you've built your traffic through your books, through your podcast, through your newsletter. As you said, you haven't missed a podcast in 6 years, right? That's a lot of podcasts. You haven't missed a newsletter in all those years, and you've been churning them out. So you really have created your content or created your traffic before there really was the ability to get traffic. And now with all the other tools that are out there, it's really interesting. And I think that's the lesson here, is that it can be done, but it really comes down to that really hard work, right? I mean, it really, Seth Godin is exceptional because he's exceptional.
It's hard to
do that without that exceptional ability, right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, you really are. I mean, he encourages everybody to be remarkable, you know, find your purple cow. Well, he's done that pretty well himself in being extraordinarily remarkable. And most of us don't have that ability to just kind of put ourselves in outer space, you know, by having that one kind of intellectual skill. But we can do, if you do the work, you can still be a serious player. And when we were at the conference mutually recently, I was blown away at talking to, you know, the little old retired pastor who sells shoes. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? You know, you go to garage sales. And no. We just buy new, but we buy liquidations. We find closeouts and then put them up on Amazon, you know, and make our $150,000 a year. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I love the possibilities that we have access to today. But it does take strategy and intentionality. It's not just a cakewalk. You know, sometimes I'm concerned about people going to a conference or getting the latest, greatest program, you know, that's going to make them rich next month. It doesn't usually work that way. It can be done, but it's real business. It's not just being lucky or in the right place or just some new slick program that we implement. No, you know, when we first started using the internet, there were some people that came out and realized, wow, you could just wow people with a little hype and emotion. You could get them to buy, you know, rotten apples. Well, guess what? The internet is also extremely transparent. And if you aren't doing business well, you're going to get crucified. You aren't going to last. People ask me, I'm a car nut, Stephen, as well. I'm always playing with cars. As a matter of fact, I'm bidding on 3 Corvettes on eBay right now. But, you know, and people ask me, you would spend that kind of money and never see the car on eBay? Yeah, absolutely. I bought a lot of cars like that. Because here's the deal. I live here just south of Nashville, Tennessee. If I go over here on Franklin Road and I buy a car from a little used car dealer there, he may have shafted 6 people last month. I have no way of knowing about that. That's not true on eBay. It's so transparent, or Amazon, I know exactly what their customers thought of them, and if they shafted somebody, I'm going to have easy access to that information. I can buy with confidence because it's so transparent, and I love that.
I love it, and I hope you do buy a Corvette. You'll come to Carlisle for the Corvette parade. So
I had one of the guys text me while we've been on this call. He's waiting for me to call him, and I know I'm going to complete the deal.
Great. You'll be up here, I bet you. What is 48 Days Coaching? I want to bring us back to some other services that you offer. So you sell lots of books, and you sell lots of other services, and we already talked about disc, but you offer coaching. What's that entail, and then who is this coaching group? Do you personally do every bit of coaching?
No. I started out, my material was really developed in the context of a Sunday school class. And so it just evolved where I was teaching on career life transitions, and people started saying, wow, I've got a son-in-law that's been without work for 3 months. What can I give him? He needs to hear what you just talked about. And I didn't have anything. But with those repeated requests, I developed just simple materials, put it together just in a spiral-bound notebook, and then I added a little cassette, and then I put it in a three-ring binder. But I just started giving people what they were asking for. And that's really all I've done over the years, just give people what they're asking for, and that's worked pretty well. But out of that, you know, it started to grow into more and more opportunities to grow and leverage that material. And wow, that's just continued. One thing leads to the next. And all of a sudden, you know, I've got books. But the coaching came as a result of that initial part as well, where people are saying, can I sit down with you and get you to help me on this process of going through this difficult and unexpected transition? Also, it wasn't very long with the repeated request where I said, sure. And I pull out a brochure. Here's the three ways that I typically work with people. Which of these would work best for you? It was a very easy transition into being paid for coaching that people were already asking for. So I did. At one point, I coached 5 days a week. But then as I got other systems in place that started to create this passive residual income, you know, I backed down from 5 days a week to 4 to 3 to 2. And at this point, I coach individuals about 1 day a month. Now, we have a coaching mastery program. Most of my coaching is helping other people establish themselves as coaches. But we also have about 350 certified 48 days coaches. And so when the requests come in, which they continue to do in volumes for my coaching, I have a team that screens those. We match them up with a coach where the expertise would match what that person's need is. Works really, really well. I love having that access to a brain trust where there are people whose coaching skills in a particular area would supersede my own in that area. We refer them to that person. So most of my coaching is done with coaches. I have one premier experience, Stephen, that again, everything that I do is a result of what people are asking for. And I have a mantra that's served me pretty well over the years. And it's simply, if three people ask me the same question, I create a product to deliver that. And so I've done that. So I have a premier coaching experience that I just established in the last 30 days. But it's interesting to see how that's developing. But it's where people can come here to the sanctuary and spend the night on Wednesday night. The sanctuary is just a converted barn at the back of our property, but we've converted it into an event center, and then we have guest quarters, and my office is back here. So they come on Wednesday night, spend the night here, and then spend all day Thursday not doing a life plan, not with me just coaching them, but simply looking at their business. So these are people who are already in business, and they just want to pick my brain about their business, look at aspects of my own. I'm very transparent about what has worked for me, and we focus just on their business. I take them to lunch at the country club on Thursday, and that night we're joined by my bride who joins us for dinner to round out the day, and that ends it. But I'm calling that the voila experience, V-O-I-L-A, which that French word means, oh my gosh, look there. That's the term, voila coaching experience. That's my premier coaching experience. It's one solid day with a client. And you can you can see that at 48days.com/experience. That's the link that goes right directly to that. It's not something I promote. a lot, but in having people ask for it, I've delivered it a couple of times. I have another lady scheduled for this coming week. She's going to be here, but I've got people who are finding it and spreading the word, it seems, pretty quickly on that.
It's, again, you know, a vending business, right? So, you know, you're out there doing your podcast, doing your newsletter, doing your books. The people are wanting to get to become part of this, and they're excited about it. The feeds come into you. You're able to spread them out to other people, and I assume that you make some money on each one of them. So it's, again, a vending business, right? That process. You build a process, you put it in place, and then you just keep following through.
You know,
I think
in all full disclosure here, in today's mail, I had over $2,000 in just referral fees from some of those coaches. That's pretty common.
That's a pretty good vending machine, yeah. Dan. I would say that is.
But it's not sophisticated technology. I mean, that is an example of it. It's just real nose-to-nose kind of relationships, building trusted relationships at every level. The referral fees that I get from our coaches, I don't look over their shoulder. I don't keep track of what they do. We just send them somebody, and if they engage with that person, sure, they send us a referral fee. But it's not something that's closely monitored. There are no legal agreements, nothing at all. It's just based on trust.
And I'll have all links for that. So if somebody who's listening to this is interested in that process, Dan has it all over his site, so it's going to be great. Do you still hold the Right to the Bank events at the Sanctuary?
We do not. That's an example of an event where people said, how can I do with my books what you've done with yours? Well, instead of just telling people over and over again, I create a product. So we had an event called Write to the Bank, a play on words. It's WRITE to the bank. And I love doing it. But we did that for 3 years. Now think what's happened in that period of time. The last 5 years, what's happened? Look at publishing companies. They have been decimated. Big publishers have been going away, closing the doors. Bookstores are closing the doors. How people get information has changed dramatically. And here's what also has happened. All of a sudden, because there's no barriers to entry, everybody is an expert. So we've got somebody who did an ebook and they sold 50 copies, you know, in the Kindle version. And so now they're teaching workshops and seminars on how to get published. It just really muddied the waters. And I just decided, I'm not going to do that anymore. But now it's not with resentment or anything. It's just, I've been there, done that. I mean, this last week we had an event here on Saturday. We called it Expressions at the Sanctuary. So we invited some artists and authors just to encourage creativity. There was no fee for them or for participants to come. We put it out on Facebook. And just an afternoon from 2 to 5, no agenda, no presentations, just to mingle with other people who are creatives. Put it on Facebook, and I think we had maybe 150 people that came through in that period of time. Just a delightful event. Well, people were like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. You know, how often do you do this? Well, we've never done it before. Mm-hmm. When's the next one? I don't know. My wife and I haven't even discussed if we're going to do it again ever. It's just something that was fun to do, but we're not trying to build we aren't trying to build a new business model. It's just one little expression of what it is that we enjoy doing and one little way to connect with people and continue to develop rapport and trust. So no, the Right to the Bank, man, I love doing that. Love doing that event. And we still have it available as a product and sells every day, but I am not doing that. We've taken that out. We replaced it with an event called Innovate. And really, we don't do that anymore either. But that was an event where we really encourage creative people to come. We are going to introduce it again one time in 2016 because of the repeated requests. So we're going to bring that event back for one time only in 2016. But I love the opportunity to get people together. But again, those live events, that's one method of generating income in our business. Not the only thing we depend on. It's just one way, again, to connect with people.
But I think there's a great example of something that was working, and it probably could have continued to work, but you chose to try something different. You're saying don't put all your eggs in that basket. That was your advice early on, like relying on Amazon or Facebook as your only model, as your only channel. You're exposing yourself to a challenge And so it's, I think that's a great example where something was working and maybe it was at its life cycle, but even so, you were able to just adjust because you have all these other things going on. I think that's the great lesson here is that people have to pay attention to.
You know, there's
I think it's really great.
There's another piece to that, Stephen, that kind of ties into this. And that is, I always have my goals set by November 15th for the upcoming year. Actually, November 14th, because that's 48 days to the new year. So, but I'm always really clear on what I'm going to do the next year. As part of that process, I identify what is the 15% that I've been doing this year that I'm going to discontinue. Now, I'm ruthless about that. And a lot of times there are things in there that have been very fulfilling, meaningful, and profitable, and yet I'm looking for what is the 15% I'm going to eliminate. Now, I do that because I don't want a business that just grows bigger and bigger and bigger horizontally. I want to stay real clean, streamlined, entrepreneurial. And by removing 15%, that opens up a new 15%. And it's in that new 15% that I'm able to experiment and try things. And really, the things that I've gotten big leverage from have been things that I put into that new 15% where I knew I wasn't risking everything. It was just something that I could try. And yet some of those things have turned out to be the most astounding exponential things that I've ever done. Like our coaching mastery program, I could have never anticipated the kind of success that we've had with that. Or my mastermind. I mean, those are things that came into that new 15%. And I'm excited about, you know, what I'm going to be able to do this next year that'll be in that new 15%.
It's an evolving business. Isn't that what we all dream of? You know, I know everybody says, oh, I want the freedom and I want to be able to just, you know, do whatever I want to do. I think you're living proof that you can do that with reservation because you still have to treat this as a business. And I think that's another great lesson is that, you know, how many starving artists are there or how many actresses go to Hollywood and they risk it all and fail? You're saying, hey, wait a second, I'm still going to risk it, but I'm only going to do a 15%, but I'm going to make sure that I really do take chances and risk and expose myself to other things. I think that's great sound advice. Just great advice.
Well, thanks. I mean, we hear that old adage, you know, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket. I mean, that came from Andrew Carnegie. I really don't buy into that. I think that's a pretty dangerous kind of thing to do. Now, in as much as I talk about, you know, multiple streams of income, the different things that we do, I also don't want those things to be so diverse where there's no synergy. That's why I use a Venn diagram. And in that, that means that activity in any one area fuels activity in the ones that it adjoins. So it's not different things where, gee, I'm mowing yards on Tuesday and on Thursday I'm painting houses and on Friday I'm writing books. Not that at all. A lot of different activities, but they all work together. Do you think, as an example, by you saw me speak recently, do you think that from that people will buy my books, attend my events, show up for coaching, and all the other things that we've talked about? Absolutely. That's the power of having that kind of a business model.
Well, I think that's so strong. I'm going to add the Venn diagram to the podcast on the website because I just think that if we took those of us in the e-commerce selling world, filled it in, we're going to see some things that don't quite fit in those three circles, and that is a great place to start reevaluating what you're doing and help you really zero in on your business. Dan, you read a lot of books, and so we're getting close to the end of our time together, and I cherish the time that you've given me. I really appreciate it more than you know. Give us one or two, and I'm going to ask you to narrow it down to one or two books that you think people could use to help grow their e-commerce business specifically. And it doesn't have to be e-commerce related, but something we can come back and apply to what we do.
You know, the books I'm going to recommend are not in the technology area. There's a whole lot of information out there about that, but they're more conceptual because I think those are the things that really either open people up to success or hold them back. So people are books like Darren Hardy's book, The Compound Effect. Everything you do matters. It's either in the plus column or the minus column. And that has to do not just with what you do in business, but other areas of your life as well. I mean, people that think they can just segment their lives into, well, you know, I'm an idiot at home, but, you know, I'm going to try to be successful at work. That's a pretty tough place to be. Books like the fairly new one by Malcolm Gladwell, David Goliath. sometimes what we think is our greatest obstacle is really our greatest asset. I love how he lays that out, because everybody's got an excuse for why it can't work for them. And then there's also a book that I recommend, written by Gay Hendricks, and it's titled The Big Leap. And it's to identify what he calls the upper limit challenge. Sometimes, and what so often occurs in the kind of space that we're in, Stephen, I mean, out there in traditional business, traditional jobs, people are used to getting a 3 or 4% increase every year. Well, you can kind of get used to that. That's like the water just heats up a little bit and you're ready for it. But what if you get into an Amazon business or eBay or Etsy or whatever, and all of a sudden, instead of making $3,000 a month, you make $30,000? You get that 10x factor. You know what happens? A lot of people sabotage that because their sense of deserving doesn't match the reality of what they've been given. Now, that may sound like kind of hokey pokey. We see it played out every day. You know, you see the athlete who gets a $10 million bonus. 6 months later, he sabotaged his career, spent the money and more, and he's back where he came from. Not because he didn't have the ability, but because the reality of the life he had been given didn't match what he thought he deserved. We see it over and over and over again. So anyway, those three books, Compound Effect, David and Goliath, The Big Leap, those are things that are probably ones that are not familiar to your listeners because they're not, you know, on top of everybody's list, but I think they unveil concepts that really identify how somebody can be successful and the dangers that may prohibit them from being so.
Man, that's just great. I've read The Compound Effect. I'm not familiar with these other two, so I can't wait to get started on. Okay, so when we close out, Dan, I always ask everyone the same last question, right? So I always describe this as, you know, this person who's trudging along, and it's, you know, unfortunately some of this stuff can become a job if you let it, right? And you lose the fun part of it. And they're trying to break through that point. Give a tip, a trick, something that we could come back to and apply to our business to help get past that point of stuck. When you hit that stuck, everybody does. How did you get through it, or how could you help us get through that?
One of the things that I think is just critically important is to be part of a mastermind. Now, we hear a lot about that these days, and the term is misused a lot in that people put together group coaching or mentoring or teaching. That's not really a mastermind. But in a true mastermind, I mean, think back to the days of Benjamin Franklin, who had the Hunta Group in Philadelphia. When he was 26 years old, he invited a few other business people who were his peers to come together. They met for over 40 years, and out of that group came the first paved roads, first fire protection system, the first public library, the first hospital, all out of that little mastermind group. But we all go through times of challenge. And in the kind of work environment we have, a lot of us today are really solopreneurs. So it's easy to be up and down in that. And when something goes wrong, to be discouraged. But if you have a mastermind, people remind you of where you were, what you can do, help give you ideas. You know, it's something that we sometimes miss. I mean, and again, traditional businesses, we used to work in teams. But a lot of times today, people don't have that. And I encourage you, create your own team. But usually that looks like a mastermind. Make sure it really is a functioning, effective mastermind. The way that can soften the blow from a whole lot of challenges in business.
Well, it is. That is such a great way to end this, because I just think that there is so much opportunity, and especially talking to your peers. You met Greg Murphy when we had lunch in CES. He's the he describes himself as the scrap guy, right? Who takes the books, and he had a fascinating discussion, wasn't it?
My gosh, I have thought about that so many times.
He's such a great guy, and you know, he's always said that. He said, you know, just I don't have anybody to talk to about my business. In my business. So he gets together with guys like me and guys like Andy and the rest of the guys you met, where we can talk at a level and hold each other kind of accountable and talk them through some of those things. And I just see so much success from having discussions at that level with peers. I think that was the key term you used there, peers, and really talking at that level. So that's just great advice. Dan, best way to get in touch with you for our listeners?
Sure. 48days.com. is a site where we have lots of information, connect with my newsletter, my podcast, some of the things we've talked about here. And then 48days.net, very interesting community of a little over 15,000 people now. People like you and me, Stephen, who are saying, I want to do something unusual. but I want to link arms with other people who are on the same path. So that's there. Those are both easy ways to connect me. I'm very accessible. I'm not hard to get a hold of at all.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. I can't wait to see you again. Next big speaking event, I'll be there in the audience. So, Dan, hey, thank you for taking the time again. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I hope that we have been able to stir up some cobwebs in your listeners and maybe give them a little hope and inspiration.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.